Thanks for joining the Dealership Fix It podcast. This is episode number 68, Kurt Von Annen, and what makes your people tick.
Right on the head, as far as, you know, possibly my experience, my exposure, and kind of how I got drawn to or my thoughts about fixed operations. So I'll give you a kind of the quick boot. And that was, I got into the automotive industry at a fairly young age, and I ended up having to actually train myself as a service writer at an automotive dealership, a very busy Jeep dealer, Pontiac, Jeep, Eagle, Pontiac. So, you know, I was in early, and I had to teach myself because the guy that was going to mentor me got sick. And so at a very busy dealership, I got thrown in, and it was, I'm either going to quit or I'm going to figure this out. And I figured it out. Thank goodness. Over 6-8 months, that dealership became a 5-star Chrysler dealership. That's when 5-star was first coming out. And I went to my owner and I said, hey, you know, we're 5-star. I think I had a lot to do with that. I was hoping there would be kind of a bump for me. And he said, you're absolutely right, Kurt. I'm going to give you an extra $100 a month. And so I gave him my 2-week notice and I left. And then I went to North Glen Dodge. That was a great experience. I went to Fisher Honda Chevrolet. I worked at Landmark Lincoln Mercury. I worked at Porsche, Audi. My goodness, the list goes on and on. I did this at so many places, and I gained so many perspectives about how important a service department is to the overall health of a dealership. I became really focused on it, and I started watching other service writers, started watching leaders, service managers, service directors work within that area, that space. And I became somebody that was really good at conflict resolution. So if somebody was losing their mind and freaking out because their Dodge Intrepid made a rattling noise going down the highway at 52 miles an hour, they'd be freaking out on the service writer. He'd be going, I don't know what you want me to do. And I would just go up and say, hey, apparently we have a problem here. Let's find out what the root cause is. Let's head to the next step. And let's see how we can help each other out in solving this. You know, we're not here to be an obstacle for you. We're here to help you fix your car. And people would watch me do that. And they would go, how in the world? And I was like in my mid-20s. So they would go, how in the world did you do that? How did you diffuse that customer like that? How did that happen? And so that question came up over and over. Place to place to place, similar situations. And I thought, I got to write this down. So in 2007, I published the book, Service Writing in Black and White. It was a mental exercise to clear my brain. It was not to sell books. I just wanted to write the book and clear my brain. The book ended up selling. And I was really involved in power sports. I started racing when I was 19. I love motorcycles. And so when Ducati North America reached out to me and said, hey, we like your book. Would you write a program for us? Would you write a training program? Absolutely. Hey, we don't have anyone that can teach this course. Can you teach the course? Yeah, I like to teach. I was already running a road racing class. I was already working with the Motorcycle Safety Foundation and Harley Davidson with the Rider's Edge program. And I thought, man, I really like adult-centered learning. I'm kind of new to training, but I think I can run with this. I think I can do it. So I told Ducati I could. And so Ducati took me in and they made me a contractor. And that's where I started leveraging things like, how does sales interact with service? How does social media play a part with sales and interlinking service and fixed operations and parts and all this stuff together? And how can we make power sports be more automotive-like in the idea of saturation or finances? These are terms that maybe a lot of power sports dealers aren't familiar with. But in the automotive industry, the service department makes so much profit that they can pay for all the expenses of the dealership, and whatever sales and parts makes on top of that is like icing on the cake, right? And here I was going from automotive to power sports and hearing people say things like service is a necessary evil, or I wish I could have a sales floor without having to have a service department. And I thought, that's crazy. Why would people say that? Because the amount of opportunity and money and cash flow that can come in through service is phenomenal. So why would people think that? And so I started to really take a look at some of what might have been some of the root causes of that, or how that happened. And so out of that came, you know, the course for Ducati, came the courses that I put forth when I went over to Suzuki. and I allowed myself to be recruited and build a training program with Suzuki. And, you know, that was cool because there was a team of people doing something rather than some dude in office at Ducati, right? So I had a team of people, resources, already had a learning system in place. And we made a program there for service writers and service managers and took it virtual. I really like the idea of going virtual. Here's why. I said to myself, what is the major complaint that dealers have when it comes to training service personnel? And a lot of times it came down to travel, right? Time out of the shop. How much does it cost me if he's not at the counter? How much does the airfare cost, the rental car, the hotel, the food, the lodging, all of that stuff? And I said, well, if I can make a virtual program and make things easier, then I think I would try that. So I'm going to jump into a screen share with you guys real quick here. Looks like this should be the screen. And thumbs up, I guess, if you can. No, that's not the right one, I don't think. Let me see. Yeah, it's there. So thumbs up if you can see the PowerPoint there, Joe.
Fixed operations after
okay,
sales.
Excellent. So here we are with fixed operations and after sales. And I thought to myself, as I take a program further, I thought, what would I want the Power Sports Academy to do? Well, I wanted to teach professional communication skills to people that talk to the public. Joe Iribarren was talking about recording phone calls. He was talking about lead follow-up. He was talking about, you know, auditing the performance of your staff. And some people, they take objection to it. They go, man, I don't want people creeping in on my phone calls, my conversations. I don't have to put up with that. But here's the deal. If you do it correctly, if you do it from a spirit of helping, advancing, training, mentoring, pouring into people, you get a whole different response. You build a whole different culture. And I do a very similar thing in the fixed operations side of it. I think a lot of the problems that we have in our service departments is communication based right from the service counter. And so I say, when's the last time that your staff had formal communication training? And then I say, hey, what's your plan, right? What's your plan to move forward for 2021? Thinking about everything that's happened this year, right? Broken supply chain, people driving into service higher numbers than ever, longer wait times. I mean, this summer I heard of some wait times that were 6 to 8 weeks long to get into a service department to get something done. So how good is the customer relationship? How good is the customer experience if they're waiting 6 to 8 weeks to come and see you, right? And so I started really looking at all these things that I could do with the Power Sport Academy to help the dealers out from that perspective. The other thing I said, you know, what's your strategy to maintain a relationship with the customer? And again, that comes back to almost the Joe Iribarren concept, right? How are we following up with people? How are we maintaining communication? How are we building relationships with people? And so I thought, how can I make this easier for the dealer? And, you know, this might sound like placating. It doesn't need to sound that way at all. Here's the deal. You guys are running a business. I say all the time, when I'm talking to other OEM representatives or talking to people that'll say, you know, these dealers, they don't know what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. That is a lie straight from the pit of hell. Dealers somehow, some way, came up with enough financial stability to open and operate a dealership, right? That in and of itself makes them more qualified than the people that might be saying disparaging things behind their backs at different offices. And so that used to really, really annoy me when I would hear that kind of thing. Because I'm like, let's not talk smack about them. Let's figure out how we can add value to them. If we can help a dealership be more financially stable, if we can help a dealer be more sustainable, well, then they're going to do a better job of edifying the OEM products, the OEM parts, the OEM services, things like that. And that's what makes that whole circle of retail and service and fixed operations and after sales, that's what makes all of that gel together and work really, really well. But I thought, how can I make it easy for the dealers? So I took everything and I made it a Power Sports Academy and put a lot of stuff online, right? I said, let's go to a virtual example. And this was before COVID. I had all this stuff built before I left Suzuki. So I said, how would I add value to service writers, service managers, you know, entry-level technicians? How would I build communication for those folks? And I said, well, here we go. We're going to talk about communication styles, communication tools. We're going to talk about, you know, how do you overcome an objection with somebody? How do you phrase things in a way where the customer doesn't lose their mind, right? And so I go over a lot of that, and I have training online for that, but I also do a biweekly support call with staff. And we go through some some things, right? I say, hey, tell me when you had an issue. Tell me when you had an issue with someone, you know, selling something. Tell me when you had someone decline a job that was safety related that you tried to sell. Tell me when you gave somebody the bill and they said, that's not what you quoted me, right? And then we kind of role play, kind of like the Joe Marcou example. We role play through those real life examples and we say, hey, how could we have done that better? How can we do this better the next time it occurs? Or better yet, how can we avoid the next time and make sure that we put certain processes in place so that we don't stumble down this path again, right? And time and time and time again, dealer might say to me, hey, I'm interested in your training, but what are you going to teach my people? Or what actions? How are you going to drive my efficiency overnight with A, B, and C? And that's not how it works. So I know that there's some other trainers and there's some other companies out there that are really fixated on spreadsheets or really fixated on certain processes that they think will drive money through a dealership. I take a little bit of a different approach. I really base it on communication and relationships. And so sales works really hard to establish that relationship with the customer. We've heard all day today about communication. We've heard about establishing those relationships. We've heard about the 15 touches before someone makes a purchase decision. I mean, there's been a lot of that we've already talked about. But then what happens in the after sales situation? What happens when the customer is gone? They take the new GSXR, they take the new Can-Am, they take the new ATV, they you know, take off on a Sea-Doo, right? They're gone. And then something happens. They got to get in touch with your service department. If after sales cannot maintain the relationship that sales works so hard to build, well, then everything's been squandered. Everything's been lost. You know, a lot of the manufacturers right now, Suzuki, for example, their worldwide initiative was to increase customer retention to 100%. Now, I don't know what Lexus's customer retention is, but it ain't 100% either, right? So I knew right out of the chute that that wasn't going to happen. But the thought of it was interesting. What they're talking about is if someone buys a brand new motorcycle, let's say they buy an SV650, they want to make sure that that customer is going to return to that dealership for the first service. Because data shows that if you can keep the first service, if you can keep the first comeback to your service department and extend that relationship with the customer that you already started in sales, you have a much better opportunity to keep that customer in an ongoing relationship. And there's tons of studies that talk about the number of motorcycles or the number of pieces of equipment that your shop sells, the number of those that will cycle through that customer's life cycle, right? Ducati, for example, did a study and said, if a person buys one Ducati, the average is that that buyer will cycle through 8 Ducatis in a lifetime. And so when you take the margin on 8 motorcycles at the Ducati premium level, right, and then you factor in whatever F&I can pack on that with extended service contracts and stuff like that, and then you pack on that $130, $150, $160 an hour in labor plus the markup on parts, for each service and each warranty visit that that motorcycle creates for your service department, that's where you really start to see the revenue blossom from a good relationship, right? And that takes me back to what I said earlier about that saturation and how service adds dollars to the rest of the business, right? What I just said about all of those repeat services, warranty repairs, things like that. For instance, you might hate the idea of customers coming in with some, you know, dilapidated GSXR that needs a front brake master cylinder recall done. But your dealership's making like between $600 and $800 to change that master cylinder out, right? It's only 6/10 in labor, but you get the markup between wholesale and retail on the master cylinder, which is really favorable. So as a business, your dealership's making a lot of money doing that. And you want that business to come to you. You want those customers to come. And when you bring in that recall for a front brake master cylinder recall, if you're staff has had the proper training and the proper communication tools, they're able to step up and add to that ticket, do a goodwill inspection, maybe tires, maybe brakes, maybe a brake fluid flush, you know, maybe just a routine service. But the idea is to give the customer the best visit they can have and move forward. If any of this resonates with what you're saying, you know, give me a hand up or something like that. And if you've got questions, feel free to jump into the comments because I'll jump into chat after this and answer some questions or concerns if people have it the way that I say it. Because I know that sometimes when I speak this, it comes out in a kind of a weird way. So I want to talk about interdepartmental flow, efficiency, and all these things. So it says, what kind of things are taught when you're working with after sales? Well, all of that. But the first step is to get the communication done at the counter. Once we get the counter done and we start building the relationship back with the customers, well, then we can start taking a look at, okay, what's the flow in the shop? So, you know, let's audit some repair orders and let's take a look at what that looks like. And to know how to do that properly, I want to know how people tick. How do people, what makes people in your department sing? What makes them work well? What makes them adjust to things? I can go in as a trainer, as a consultant, and I can say, look, here is the book from California on Write It Right for service writing. Follow these directions and you guys will be fine. But that's not how human beings work, right? And so whether I'm talking to customers or I'm talking to staff at a dealership, the main thing is what makes people tick, right? How many people don't live close enough to their dealership so that owning the dealership and being a family guy at the same time makes sense? That's more people than you think it is. Or, you know, how many dealer owners do I talk to that really aren't the owner, right? They're kind of like a silent partner, a minority partner, and the majority partner is this guy that I never see or talk to, right? That's a different set of pressure. That's a different set of examples. How many guys do I talk to that are running a dealership that have a huge family at home, 5 kids, 6 kids, you know, adopted kids, things like that. How many of them are wrapped up in nonprofit work, things like that. And by knowing what makes them tick, I'm able to create my communication in a way that can identify with them and then hopefully help them find the value and take steps in the right direction to build themselves properly, right? These are all kind of like leadership tools, but by implementing leadership philosophies in the fixed operations training, we're combining the psychology with the action. And that is where we really start to see the results. So understanding how people tick helps me to understand how I'm going to communicate with that service writer, that service manager, that lead technician. You know, how can I identify with them and communicate to them the importance of dotting the I's, crossing the T's, making things happen? And so I work people through kind of a system in that. When people come into the Power Sports Academy, they take a course on personality styles, communication styles, work styles, you know, how to build an effective team with different communication styles, right? And all of this is part of the training so that by the time I'm actually working with them on the biweekly support call, they've already kind of had a little bit of a conditioning as to what we're actually talking about. And then I put here, as we grow, as we connect, we grow. And so as we make those identifications and as we put those processes in place, just like we were talking earlier, right? Joe Marcoux was talking about, you know, it's a culture shift and it's got to take time. Joe Airbaron was talking about, you know, this isn't an overnight light switch kind of a thing. It's got to take time. I talk to dealers a lot and talk about a 30, 60, 90 day plan, taking a look at some key performance indicators and seeing what direction or what trend we're establishing with the work we're doing and then doubling down on the stuff that works. And so I say here, as we connect, we grow. It says once we begin to connect and understand both the drivers of our customers and the drivers of our staff, we're able to leverage our communication and our relationships in a way that make us really, really productive. So if you've listened to me this far, you're thinking to yourself, Kurt's really talking about a lot of psychobabble about making people happy and identifying with people and communicating well. But how does that get more work done in my shop? Well, it happens with the communication and the relationship building. You begin to have a culture of respect and productivity. That respect and productivity, especially if it's from a top-down kind of display, works really, really, really well. Like I said, I do RO audits. I do what I call heartbeat reports. The heartbeat report gives me a trend, basically some key performance indicators on how the shop is doing. And then I meet on that biweekly support call with the staff, right? And remember, this is on-site at your location. They don't have to travel, no time away from the shop. Try and really keep the expense of training your people at a minimum, but we try to keep the quality really high, right? And we get in there and we go, well, here's where you were in October. Here's where you are in November. Let's take a look at, you know, what you've implemented or what changes you've put in place in the last 30, 60 days. Let's see if we're seeing growth. Are we seeing growth here, here, and here? Great. Let's double down on that. Let's continue. What are some areas that are areas of growth? Where can we apply that? And then once that starts to smooth out at the service counter and there's a process where the customers are starting to see a process, they're starting to feel the relationship that your dealership is growing with them, not just a person, but the dealership as a whole is growing with the people that are coming in to do business with you, you'll notice that you start to free up time. And that time is where we can really double down and become effective and productive. So that's when I start going into the service sales funnel, and we get into the intricacies of how ROs come into the shop in a special order on a daily basis, right? So a special order on a daily basis for the repair orders to come into your shop in a way that fits the most efficient way to get the work through the shop. And this is interesting because this is where I start to tell people that, you know, you don't have waiters. Like, unless you have a designated waiter lift that does like oil changes and tires, I don't schedule waiters. Because a waiter disrupts the service sales funnel. And every time I disrupt the service sales funnel, I cut off the outflow from the bottom of that funnel, right? And it causes a gap in a technician making money and in a shop turning profit. So every time we deviate from the service sales funnel, we actually cost ourselves money if we build the system up properly. And I go through this whole thing with folks. And what's really cool is to see them grow, to see a dealership that, you know, might jump up $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 in a year. That's fantastic parts and labor sales. But, you know, I've had examples up like in Canada, for example, dealership took my training and a year later, they're up $700,000. And when that happens, it's over the moon because it's not just the money. You guys remember earlier, there was a talk and someone said, it's not just about money. Joe was talking about pre-qualifying clients that he might work with and saying, like, it's just about the money. I don't want you in my team. It's got to be a cultural thing. Well, that's kind of what happens. When everything fires correctly and the technicians are productive, they get the work in an organized way, they're happy. Their morale is up. It decreases employee turnover. The work getting through in an efficient, productive way lowers the wait time or the lead time to get bikes into the shop. So your customers end up being more satisfied. So now you've got happier customers, happier technicians. The culture inside the shop is elevated, right? And through all this, there's increased productivity and efficiency, which drives your profit, adds to your margin. And that's my goal. So as we do that with folks, I really find it super, super important. The slide that's up now says, you know, focus on KPIs, look at repair order audits and heartbeat reports. Yeah, that drives the numbers. That's the spreadsheet side of the training, right? That's what some of my competitors might bring to the table and really talk about, like maybe in a 20 group full of managers, right? But a 20 group full of managers doesn't get to the point that's the second big bullet, and that is the heart point. If you know the heart of your people and you work and you build relationships with your people and you help your people to build relationships with your customers, you're going to find that overall, these leadership principles, as you employ them in a fixed operations mindset, are going to increase parts, labor, and profit, right? And I always say to people, if you take my training and you don't experience a growth in customer satisfaction, a decrease in employee turnover and an increase in profit, well, then it was kind of a waste. And so I jump in on that. And I guess after that, the whole thing, when I say build process on this page, is everything that we do, everything that we implement, everything that we do from a sales from the front of the store all the way to the back of the store should have a process. That's kind of what Joe Irabaran was talking about with the lead capture, right? Is having that process and being able to track those processes. And so that heartbeat report that I talked about with key performance indicators, that's what I use to show the trends. And so if there's no process, there's nothing to track. And if there's nothing to track, you don't really know what your success level is, right? Leaders that say, work harder, work faster, that's not leading. That's dreaming, right? Work harder, work faster. If a leader says, hey, I got an idea, let's give this a shot, and they step out first and implement something, demonstrate it, and then show you how to do it, you know, that's a process, right? That's when you're putting something in place. And that, to me, is what brings it all home. Let me jump off of here. And did we have any comments that I really need to go through here, Laura? I got busy talking, and I wasn't reading.
No, you're good. You're all good. Anything comes through, I'll let you know.
Ah, cool, cool, cool. The KPIs and the heartbeat report for me is that is the center of everything that makes those biweekly support calls really hit home. On this particular call, we've got a couple people in chat that I've worked with and their staff that I've worked with. And it's super, super interesting. Oh, my camera went away.
I think we lost you, yeah.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. We can hear you fine.
Okay.
You can hear him, right?
Well,
thumbs up?
Yeah, let me play there. But that's weird. The camera went out. But the heartbeat and the KPI reporting, that's the report card. That's what says, hey, the hard work is paying off. That's what's working out. And so when people say, hey, I need to see a return on investment, or I need to see the results of what I'm paying for here, that is what really, really drives it home. Now, having people smile at you, when you're a dealership owner and you come in through the back door and your staff is happy and they're playing music and your service desk is happy and you walk by the service desk and you don't see customers yelling at your staff, that's awesome, right? That's fantastic if that happens for you. But realistically, you know, you also want to see it in your bottom line. You want to see if your, you know, if your spreadsheet is going to make sense, if your cash drawer is going to make sense at the end of the day. And so what's really weird is I thought about this round table and I thought about what it would be like to bring all these people together. And I really started trying to drive the idea internally of like, how can I add the most value to dealers in a way that makes sense to them? I turned on a different camera. So there I am. I don't like this view very much, but as I must have, after, I guess 5 hours is the most that USB camera can handle. but as I thought about how to add the most amount of value to the dealers and how to really pull this round table off, you know, and I thought about all the different things I could talk about in fixed operations, right? I could talk about that service sales funnel for 4.5 hours. The intricacies of what repair orders come in first. Is it warranty? Is it customer pay? Is it service work? Is it a repair? Is it, you know, scheduled maintenance? All of that stuff, all the intricacies of that become an entire segment to itself. But today, for the thing I wanted to focus on today was relationships and communication. You know, as I look at the roundtable stuff, Stacy led off with leadership. You know, Joe covered sales. You guys covered BDC and social. And, you know, the root cause, the Achilles heel of dealerships and where they're really, really missing out. I had a sales expert tell me once, he said, Kurt, stop telling dealers how much money you're going to make them. Stop telling them you're going to increase their service sales by 200,000 or 300,000. Because realistically, a lot of people won't be sold on the idea of gaining something, which sounds really counterintuitive, but a lot of people aren't sold on the idea of gaining something. In business, you tell them what they might lose and they'll freak out, right? I could say, hey, take my training and I'll show you guys how to make $200,000 through your service department. And people will go, yeah, whatever, dude. But if I said, if you don't take this training, you're going to sacrifice all the relationships you made through the COVID process in your sales department, right? And when you run out of inventory and the supply chain's broken and the new stuff that everybody wants isn't available and now they want to come to your service department, you didn't work on that relationship and that's going to be gone, right? Then you're going to lose. And when you start talking about things that will get lost, sometimes that's the motivator. Sometimes that's where people really, really come to life. That sounds depressing. I don't like to be a negative kind of guy. I don't like to talk about losses. But when I think of the Achilles heel of a dealership and I think about where they lose the most amount of customers, most people, most dealers will confide in me and tell me, you know, it's the guys I got at the counter. And then ironically, I'll say, okay, well, how do we train your guys? And the dealers will say that they think that the people are at this level. They think people are this high on their communication skills. When in reality, after we do a needs assessment, we find out it's much lower than the dealer had thought. And if we just work on people's communication skills, overcoming objections, building relationships, you know, what emotional intelligence really is. I mean, you don't have to be, you know, weak and I'm going to use one of Stacy's terms, right? But there's toxic energy, there's feminine energy, there's masculine energy. And people use these terms in sales or in a service arena as if they're all taboo, but they're not. They're unbelievably great tools that we can teach people how to use. And through that, mitigate the losses at the service department and help the dealership thrive. That was a lot. Stacy's like, Kurt was going off on a weird tangent, and then somehow he brought it home.
It wasn't weird at all. It was great.
Okay. So for me, I'm like super, super passionate about the dealers. The ones that know me from, that knew me from Ducati when I worked at Ducati, the ones that attended the training there, they know I'm a fruitcake. They know I'm a nutcase. You know, I would dance and sing and do whatever it took to make a message make sense, you know, in a training exercise. As weird as it is, you know, I was like a TikTok dancer. I'd be up in the front of the room, you know, shuffling around. But at the end of the day, it was how do we, and this is kind of a question to everybody on the round table, really, right? At the end of the day, how do we ensure that we add the most amount of value to the people that took the time to attend or to the people that take time to listen to a repeat on the Dealership Fix It podcast? You know, where does that value come from? And do people listening to this right now understand the passion and the drive and, you know, our internal drive to add value to them and to show them that they can really make it? Because power sports is rough. You know, this period of time right now is unique because COVID drove a lot of people to the dealership showrooms, right? So in that respect, they've got more traffic than they've seen in the last half, in the last half a decade. So traffic-wise, they're doing great. But I'm also hearing about people still making deals and selling things at $200 over invoice, which means they didn't watch their margins. And if they lost their margins and the OEM suppliers do a bad job on the supply chain, we're going to run out of product. And then how do we keep profitability up for the dealership past that?
Do you mind if I share my little hierarchy graphic to kind of just round it out and basically answer your question? It was just the one common theme that I saw across the board in kind of every single person's like, I see this all the time. People don't want to use this, don't want to do this, don't want to invest in this. And it was kind of the same thought that came up with everyone's presentation. So let me just share my screen really quick and just let me know if you can see it.
You're up. Hierarchy of alignment.
Awesome. The hierarchy of alignment in business. So this is what I was talking about as far as being that influential leader and really understanding just period how your business is built, and that the most important thing is understanding you are the foundation upon which it's built. So I hope this really kind of visually ties it in and brings it home on understanding everything that we talked about today. Because right, we started with leadership. You know, whether you're the owner, the general manager, you're that foundation piece, and then everything else follows. So we're talking about the structure, the system. In the structure, that's how you engage with your team. Right? Your service department, your sales department, all of your employees, all of those different things. And a lot of the systems that we were talking about, whether we're talking about, you know, CRM, lead management, and we'll get into the social media piece when we get into the marketing and messaging, but literally this is how your business functions. And again, it's still built on top of you, the business. Then you have your offers. You know, are we talking about service offers? Are we talking about the specific items you're selling, whether it's, you know, aftermarket stuff, whether it's the actual vehicles themselves, whether it is, again, like service level things, any of it, anything that you are offering, period. And then, of course, a built on top of the offer, because the offer is going to come from all of those things that it's built on top of. Then you get into your messaging, your marketing, all the amazing stuff that Laura was talking about, right? Even this, you know, the sales kind of comes in with the offers and the messaging comes in with the offers, but that's how you get to who is that amazing client that you are wanting to call in to your business. It all comes from, is built on top of each other. And this is why it's so important. Every single person who came on here today was talking about, it is blowing my mind that people are not using these things, but it's because we go back to the foundation piece. And the part that people are, you know, they would rather be in that hustle place. And this applies even to the sales department, to the service department. Each individual person is going to go through their own hierarchy as well to get to the goal. So if they're choosing, instead of automating, to stay in hustle mode, which we talked about this morning with the leadership piece, stay in that busyness for the sake of busyness, or not making the investments to allow things to be easier, it goes back down to this base fear, which is actually fear of success. The fear that, what if I actually get what I want? And it is amazing how many people will find every which way to Sunday to subtly, very subtly, sabotage getting their goal because there's this deeper fear. What if I get the clients that I want? What if I get the people coming in with this amazing automated lead generation system? What if I get the people coming in through social media and marketing? What if I'm closing the sales, or my sales team is actually closing the sales? Then what? Because that is the most uncharted territory that we have. We're all pros at failing or sucking or falling short, because we're all internal perfectionists. We all have an inner critic. We're good at that. But the other side, the unknown, the truly uncharted waters are, what if I actually get what I want? What if I get the goal? What if I actually create the impact? Have this amazing scaling dealership that's phenomenal, right? Because then what? And so you need to get really clear on, will you give yourself permission to succeed?
That happens at every level.
Yes, every level, every level. It shows up in things like imposter syndrome. It shows up in the self-doubt. It shows up in the inner critic. Every single level, from the newest kid sweeping the floor all the way up to, you know, the multi-million dollar leader. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, folks, we've got a whopping 14 minutes left of our scheduled time in this roundtable. And so with that, I want to thank the attendees that stuck it out. I mean, the names that I've seen stay on the list, I'm actually surprised. I'm like, holy crud. Like, A, they came. B, they stayed. Like, that's cool, right? It's 5 hours is a long time to do anything on Zoom. For the panelists that have come, Joe Marcoux stepped out. He had another training thing he had to do on Zoom real quick. But man, you guys, everybody knocked it out of the park. Now, I was super, super impressed with Joe Marcoux's talk. He's not here for me to kiss his fanny right now. So the one that I'm going to move to next is, Joe Iribarren. Joe, the products, the services that you offer, you took me on a tour of your stuff, you know, online. You did some screen shares with me, and I was really, really impressed at how you structured the tool so that a dealer can get in and go, oh, this is what I'm doing. This makes sense. This is next, you know? And that to me is huge, because a lot of tools that we use, and I'm going to pick on Laura, but I mean, someone could sign up for a Hootsuite account and still confuse themselves just trying to attach the social media accounts, right? I mean, it's not plug and play like people think it should be. And Joe, your product does a really good job of taking something extremely complex and going, here's your next step. And that's pretty cool.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. You guys can hear me okay, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. I just went into my AirPods. I appreciate that, man. And I think I just want to share, like, because it's funny, like this kind of just ties right back in, and like almost like a full 360, right? It goes right back into even some of what Stacy was just talking about, like just kind of trying and doing, falling on your ass. Like, we're masters of imperfection, but we try to have everything perfect. And so originally, when, you know, I tried putting my passion and putting a name to it and making it a brand and, you know, determining this is how we're going to help dealers, where we originally started was only with managed marketing services. Because we figured they're struggling to get the leads, so let's just get them the leads. But, you know, through doing that, then we realized like, oh shit, we're bringing in the leads and like, they're not doing anything with it. They're not getting followed up on or anything. And I had really had a passion to almost say like, no, I refuse to throw away your money. Like, it's not even my money, but I just won't do that for you, you know? So then we that's how we came up with Dealer Lead Pro. We started developing that. And so then became this process of like using the automation, leveraging the things that not only just power sports dealers, like nobody wants to get stuck there sending, you know, 30 emails a day, you know? So we developed that. And then we said, oh shit, they're still not picking up even after people raise their hand and even with the use of automation. So then we went on to like, you know, for the guys that needed the extra help, doing like a full on like BDC solution where, you know, we have a like a soft BDC solution that everybody that we do managed marketing service, we put on. So we follow up to a certain extent on their behalf. But then we have to develop a full one, which is, okay, we'll actually make the freaking phone call for you, you know? So, but long story short, it isn't always necessarily a pretty journey. It's a journey of realizing, you know, just like, cause I think that ties back to that accountability and like understanding what you need and vulnerability and understanding what you need, I think makes you a better helper. And being able to say, okay, you know, and understand, and that's really all it is. It's just being still enough and quiet enough to really listen, get our egos outside of the equation and realize this is what they need. A lot of dealers are, there's a certain animosity. I mean, dealerships and OEMs can't live without each other. It's a symbiotic relationship. But what happens very often is they talk at each other. Particularly a lot of OEMs, you know, will conk the dealers over the head with, you don't follow up enough, you don't follow up quick enough. And so the dealer is like keenly aware of it, but the dealer goes right back at them and says, well, how do I fix it? And then the OEM doesn't necessarily have a solution for them. So therein kind of summarizes the dynamic between the two, you know?
The one elephant in the room that you just kind of called out, Joe, that I want to be really transparent and blow this out. And people might not like what I say, especially people at the OEM that might listen to this. They don't know what to do for the dealer's problem because they're not dealers.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I sat in the conference room with vice presidents and CEOs of major corporations. And they would be rolling out some new initiative or new program or new demand for the dealers to have to follow. And I would put up my hand and I would say, have we run this by some dealers to see if they even want this? Like, you guys are rolling this out like a feature. And I don't even, if I was a dealer, I wouldn't do this. And then I found out nobody in the room had any dealer experience. Nobody in the room had ever been on the sales floor, you know, of a multi-line dealership to push something. So, you know, when some fancy European brand is trying to push some initiative for point of purchase sales stuff at a dealership, you know, a multi-line dealer with, you know, Kawasaki's and Hondas and stuff parked in the corner, they're not into that, you know, and when it becomes mandatory or something, it's really bizarre. And so when these problems arise with warranty submissions or with buyers programs, right, for spring purchase, spring buyouts and stuff like that, programs are rolled out with no foreknowledge of what a dealership really operates like. And that's a lot of the disconnection, the miscommunication, and that animosity you talked about comes from that. Because the people making the rules don't understand the game. That was rough. I would like to defer.
Very real. Very real, though. It is, you know.
Well, and that's why we put together something like this, so that, you know, all of us are kind of unencumbered, right? We're all kind of independent and free, and we can say what's on our mind without worrying about not getting our paycheck from the guy, right? So you can throw it out there. I wanted to defer to the wise old sage who we can't see on the screen other than a logo. Brian, and you are out in the thick of it, man. What are your thoughts? What's your highlight for today? What really piqued your interest?
You know, I would just say for me that I think that I'm glad I agreed to be a part of this, not knowing kind of what it would be like, and not knowing several of you guys as panelists on here, and knowing exactly what your approach or experience levels and all that was. And it really does fit nicely, you know, for me. And I haven't done any of my podcasts in a while. I've been too busy with other things, but it really does fit in with what I originally had started doing that for, which is sort of sharing stories for the obviously for the positive benefits of the story, the learning through someone else's struggle sort of angle, and what, you know, each of you all sharing your different pieces of that. And hopefully, you know, with the dealers that have been on here listening, and those who will, you know, I don't know if you're doing this as a recorded available after the fact, but yes, I'm going to try to piece out as much as I can every individual person is sort of their presentation audio wise and put it out as episodes. So, you know, look for that. But I was really, you know, I was real happy to be honest. I don't know. I was sat down this morning thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do 5 hours of sitting in one place. I took the day off for this, and I'm glad I did. You know, I'm glad to be a part of this. I'm glad to help, in this case, share the story of what you guys presented today. And I think you all did a killer job, so I appreciate it.
Now, what kind of moron schedules 5 hours on a Zoom call?
I've never heard of such a thing.
This is not the first. Not the first at all.
Yeah, Gary Vaynerchuk did some kind of 12-hour thing or something like that. Maybe I'm just trying to imitate him.
Well, you know, and I don't think anybody hears Joe Rogan either, where you can do multiple hours of just rolling it, you know. But
yeah,
having this sort of a heavy hitter group of panelists, it definitely, you guys brought 5 hours worth of content. So congratulations.
Well, before I turn the screen over to Joe Marcoux, because we know how excitable he can get, I did want to point out, those of you that are new to Stacy Raske, whether you're listening, you're viewing in real time, you're watching a replay, whatever, we've got a really good piece with her as a podcast on the Mañana No Más podcast. And that's where you can get a really good background of Stacy, the badass biker chick, the Iraqi war veteran. You know, I grew to knew her as someone that focused on training, you know, women CEOs and women leaders and all this. And I made the mistake of overclassifying her in the past. And, you know, she brings so much to the table that if you are open, if you will be vulnerable and you will open yourself up to coaching at that level, Stacy's phenomenal. I put her link in the chat, and anyone that's registered for this, you're going to see emails coming from the site telling you how to reach each and every one of the participants and panelists anyway. Joe, welcome back, man.
You're muted, Joe. But I just wanted to say thank you, Kurt, really quickly before Joe hopped in. Thank you so much for the kind words.
You could have done what I do to my staff when we're doing a meeting. We keep them muting. We just let them keep talking. We go, and then after 2 minutes, we go, "Hey, you've been muted the whole time." So you guys, thanks for not doing that to me, because I pull that gag on everybody.
Of course. I think, you know, just for the respecting everyone else's time, I'm sure we could have all done that.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. I actually had two dojos this afternoon that I was teaching. One to an alpha class, one of my original classes, so they're way ahead. And then to a black belt group that are becoming teachers. So I did what I could to shuffle around, so I apologize that I couldn't stick around for the whole day, but I'm back for a reason, because this has been fantastic. And the parts that I've missed, I promise I'm going to be watching on replay. I jumped in, Laura, tickety tick, 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 and I said, yeah, do this. It was good.
All right. I am typing an answer into Chris. He was asking where the podcast was. Chris, that's Mañana No Más. That is on a... Man, I host it on Anchor, but it ends up on everything, man. iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, it's everywhere. But Mañana No Más is me. Anything that comes up Mañana No Más online is typically me, which is weird, because I'm old, white, and bald. I used to say fat. I'm not fat anymore.
Same lean.
I worked really hard on that. Mr. Irabaran, what, you have a highlight or something? We've got like 3 minutes left.
Highlight. I don't know. I think I'll give you a little bit of thoughts on us coming together. I think it was a tinge there, man. I'm going to sound so corny. My son will say I'm being cringy. There was a bit of a sense of something magical going on. And I think there's a certain freedom that maybe all of us are experiencing and pursuing our true passions. Ours look very unique in their own way. But it doesn't matter that we're all, you know, here on this webinar, entrepreneurs. You know, we may have people here that are joining us that are marketing directors or sales managers, and their journeys could look very different. But I think that boiling back down to what we mentioned, or what was mentioned in some of the presentations at the beginning, which is just that humanity aspect of it, and really being able to follow, just being human, you know, allowing yourself to feel, follow your passion. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, without any kind of commitment here by all of us on this call, I would be really looking forward to making this something that's relatively, you know, that happens relatively often. I mean, I think it could bring a lot of value to people. And, you know, I know we're kind of doing a little bit of a soft test, but, you know, we may be able to blow it up out there and really bring value depending on, let's see what happens depending on the feedback we get from today.
Yeah. A lot of it's dependent upon the feedback, man. I mean, if people dig it and if people search the replays and, you know, we see traffic, well, then obviously there's demand, right?
Yeah. And I got to say, I feel like there's a good mix that's happening and going on with regards to a balance of the topics, you know? So even though it was long and it's like 5 hours and a while to sit through, on the same token, you know, I'm thinking like each and every single one department kind of balanced each other out. Because if I would have talked for 5 hours, you know, I'd have had people cross-eyed and falling asleep. And it's just, you know, and I talk a lot more about the technical stuff. So then other people talk a little bit more about the theoretical. So I really enjoy that mix.
So Joel, how many years have you been doing what you're doing? Real quick, go.
16.
Kurt, how many years?
35.
Laura, how many years?
11.
Stacy, how many years?
Oh gosh, as a official coach, five. But okay. People would say I've been doing it my whole life.
Okay, so listen, like for everybody listening and watching, this is over 100 years combined that we've time collapsed into 5 hours. I don't know about you, but that's incredible value. That's time collapsing. That's what we all do for you. And this is value. This costs you nothing.
We need a really good editor now to splice all of our content.
Yeah. And we need good reviews. We need good reviews. Everybody showed up and loved it. They got to share, give us some props and some love. All the like parts, love. Social media. Share like crazy.
My final shout out to the attendees that came, that stayed, that did it. I'm going to take the leadership role and end the meeting. Guys, I am absolutely thrilled, pleased, and you'll see an email from me. We'll schedule a get together and have a kind of a debrief and make sure that we're all on the same point. But I think this was fantastic. So thank you so much for agreeing to it, for doing it.
And to the disembodied voice, Brian, let's give him a hand up too.
The disembodied voice.
he's like our DJ, you know, nobody really sees him. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
All right, thanks for putting this together, Kurt. Really appreciate you, man. You're on fire. This was great.
Yeah. Round of applause to Kurt for this. Thank you.
I learned a couple things in the morning, but those hiccups will not exist next time if there's a next time.
All right. Let's make it happen.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you,
bye,
everyone.
Thank you so much for joining.
Thanks. Take care. We'll